for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 611 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special guest with Eric July from the Ripaverse. The Ripaverse is an indie comics publisher that describes itself as a comic book company for comic book readers. We talk about their exceptionally successful crowdfunding campaigns for both issues of Isom, which you can buy at their website, ripaverse.com. The team he's assembling to expand the universe he's been creating, and what we can expect from them in the coming months. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Eric has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Ripaverse Comics, a comic book company for comic book readers. The American comic book industry has its issues, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a market. You just want awesome comics and a place to escape. Somebody has to bring it back to its essence. Why not us? That's what it says on the Ripaverse Comics website. I think it's just ripaverse.com. And one of the big creative forces behind it is Eric July, and I'm talking with him right now. How you doing, Eric?
Hey, brother. How you doing? I appreciate you having me, by the way.
It's good to talk with you. I have been so anxious to get to speak with you and tell you that I'm a huge fan of all you're doing. And I just want to celebrate the success that you're having, which just blows me away, I have to say. I'm just... I can't believe how great things are as far as what you're up to. Let me just point out a thing or two about that. If you go to the website, ripaverse.com, and you go to the Isom number one campaign, which was the first book you guys published, mm-hmm. You were asking for $100,000. What you got was $3,737,920,000. Now, that's what I call success. That was just amazing.
That was wasn't anticipated. Obviously, I went into it not saying that I didn't want to see success, or I wasn't anticipating we'd have success. I thought we'd do okay, and you know, we marked that number just to give us something, right? Break even, and not necessarily even break even. It was more to just something that we felt good with. That was what the number was about, because I had spent more than that, but you know, we blew through that almost immediately, and it really showed just how people were just stoked on this product.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to Isom number two. Isom number two, you upped your campaign goal to $350,000, and you earned $2 million more than that. Now, again, that's what I call success. I'm amazed, because you did this through your website, right? You didn't do this through like Kickstarter or anything else.
Correct. We wanted to, I'm all about the independence of it all. And, you know, I remember there was some people that were questioning the idea, because I think it's more so centered around the fact that people are, you know, become accustomed to some things, and, you know, independence like that, I can understand why that's murky, man. That can be a little scary for some people. And it came with our set of challenges as well. But yeah, we wanted to make sure that we could future-proof everything. And our way of doing that is trying to rely on ourselves as much as possible, as opposed to third parties. So what we did was we built our own website. We kind of, it's just hybrid, right? It's not a traditional crowdfund, but it has that transparency that you've expected from crowdfunds, where you can see kind of numbers, how much money's coming in, all that good stuff. So, you know, we did our pre-order, and yeah, two back-to-back campaigns, multi-million dollar successes. And I'm just blessed to be in the position. But, you know, it's one of those things where we don't have time to celebrate. I think people would love for me to take a little more time to do it. But it was one of those things where it's like, we're right back to work. We got customers that need to be satisfied.
Right, right. Well, that's part of the – one of the things if you go to – if you click on the About thing, there's the Code of Ethics. And maybe we'll touch on that real quick before we get into the book. It says, this comic book company was not created at random. Our founder had been rooted in the culture of American comic books since he was a youngster, and being a creative in the industry was always a dream of his. And then it goes to, you have like at least three ideals or goals. Number one is to respect the customer. That's boy, do I appreciate that one. That's a good one. And then there's canon and continuity. And you're talking about remaining true regardless of the medium. The characters should appear in officialized animation and live action, should they, that those depictions will also be as accurate as possible. But I like the fact that you have an ever-expanding universe and that every single book you buy will always matter. If retcons are to exist, they will only be used in the classic sense of introducing new information. So I that's so great. I'm sick and tired of reboots. I have to be honest.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, that's why the company was started, right? It was looking at some of these problems that plagued, I guess, the industry. Issues that I had personally as a longtime customer, and I built in that code of ethics. I was like, okay, let's see what the fundamental problems is that I have. How about we just don't do that, and we make a kind of an almost an oath, right, to our customers that, you know, we're not going to do X, Y, and Z. And that's a standard that people are to hold us to. We expect them to hold them to us, and they have every right to, obviously, because we're putting ourselves out there like that. So, you know, that code of ethics is specifically, we put it in all of our books. We just want people to understand, like, hey, this is a company that takes this stuff very serious. And no matter when you get in, we want you to be able to get a book and have some fun.
Well, the last member of the... part of the code of ethics is a comprehensive timeline. Because we value canon and continuity, it's important that you're able to follow the timeline as these characters grow. Boy, that's good. And then you talk about how there will be an official chronological timeline that's constantly updated by our company. Not every story will be told in chronological order, so we'll always make it as easy as possible to keep up as the universe grows. And I have to say, I ordered... and I got both ISOM number 1 and number 2, and I'm hooked.
Appreciate you so much, man. Thank you so much.
I always like adventure in my comics. I like something that's interesting going on, that's engaging. And I just, you know, I when I got number 1, I just liked it. And I actually ended up ordering 2 number 2s just to make sure I got number 2 because I wanted to be sure I got it. The thing I really respected the most was the talking about continuity, the ability to go from number 1 to number 2 seamlessly. It's just, you know, if I had gotten the 2 at the same time and read them, I wouldn't notice any difference or any changes between them because they really were very strongly hinged together. And I love that. Oh, man, I was sitting here going, this is a wonderful, wonderful start to the Ripaverse and things. I loved them. I thought they were great.
I appreciate you acknowledging that for sure, because, you know, certainly for my writing style, that's my approach. You know, it's, I want them to flow really well. And definitely initially on, right. We kind of went out there. It's an arc. We got 3 parts. There'll be 3 issues out of part of this arc. And yeah, they should be able to be read and follow fairly easy if you're reading them back to back to back like that. So, you know, in my writing style, that's my approach. When you guys get a chance to read ISOM 3, it's the same thing. It picks up right after the events of ISOM number 2. So, you know, that's just kind of in the way that I approach writing as well. And I'm really, you know, we release bigger books, right? We don't limit our stuff to like just floppies. Mm-hmm. It's 90 pages for 96 pages for 1, 112 for number 2. Mm-hmm. So we write in a way that, and we release our books in a way that it gives people enough for our writers to feel like they're able to get the point across. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and tell not be so limited. And that's why I think they flow so well, because they're not like restrained to that, and they can tell a really compelling story. And then once we get to the next issue, it's just really picking right back up where it left off.
I loved it. I just, as soon as I got number two, I dove right into it. And of course, I reread one to make sure I got everything that was in two. And boy, it just flowed seamlessly to me. I was just very impressed, because so often, you know, comics don't do that. You know, sometimes you end up 6 months later and we don't know everything that happened in the 6 months.
Yep.
And it's so frustrating, but it's nice to read an adventure story like that. And just, you mentioned number three. I got to ask right off the bat, do you know when number three is going to be coming out, or when you're going to do the fundraising for that?
Well, we'll launch our pre-order campaign for number three. I know for sure, all things pending, all things going right with the production, it should be next year for sure. And, you know, because we got a couple upcoming books that'll be released before that, like Alpha Corps, and we have Yaira's book that'll be released before that as well. Is that going to be the next book right after Yaira? That's what we're trying to determine. If that makes sense for our release, because we got a lot of work that we're doing right now. So I think that it's very possible, but it's hard to say. But I know people are itching to kind of conclude at least this part of the arc for Isom's, the ill-advised arc, as we call it. So I know a lot of people are excited about that, and we do want to get that out. And we already are working on it. So it won't be for a lack of content. It'll be more so from, how does this look, right? How does this make sense, and how does this look for our release schedule? Is more so what we're doing, because this book's going to be done probably by the end of the year. We're almost like 60 pages, I believe, over 60 pages, well over 60 pages in of pencil and ink. So wow, we're rocking and rolling.
That's great. I'm so glad to hear that, because I'm dying to see number three. I can't wait for it. Now, I just have to ask a couple of questions, because I'm always interested in how things got the way they are. Mm-hmm. So Ripaverse, how did it get called the Ripaverse?
Well, it was one of those things where, obviously that's my nickname in being Ripper. And I was like, okay, I need something that embodies kind of, okay, this is going to be obviously my vision, right? This is going to be my creative vision. But it's not just mine in a sense that there won't be other people that are a part of it. And considering the overall, you know, concept of what it is that we're building, with it being a universe, that's our big selling point. It's not just Isom's books. It's just the other characters' books as well, that we know that we're growing this universe. So I was like, all right, why don't I just call it Ripaverse? So that'll be, it kind of streamlines everything. Like, you know what it is that you're talking about, and it can be used, a term that can be really used interchangeably. So whether you're talking about the Ripaverse as its universe, or you're talking about Ripaverse as the company, it's very easy for people to acknowledge what it is that you're talking about. So that was kind of the idea, the overall idea behind it.
So it was based on your nickname.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That was the original kind of concept of the Ripaverse.
Okay. I couldn't understand where the Ripper came from, because I couldn't see it anywhere. Now, of course, I got to ask then too, Isom, is that like an abbreviation? Is that a nickname? Where does the name Isom come from?
So we do have a in-universe reason for why that is chosen, which we'll discuss kind of at a later date. For sure, people will have to find out, keep up with the story to find out what that's going to be all about. But as far as the character name, as well as some of the other characters that are connected to Isom, like his sister and his mother and his niece, they're all named after my family members. So my great-great-great-grandpa, his name is Isom. That's his actual first name. So it's not an acronym. But it does have an in-universe kind of reason that it is that we're doing it. But it's his actual name.
I'm wondering what nationality that is. Is that part of like a certain culture that name is common?
It depends. It was a little more known definitely back then during his time. Cause you know, Isom Knox was born like in the mid 1800s, right? So it was more common then as a first name. You see it sometimes a last name, especially like in spots like the Middle East and stuff. But yeah, it's not as common. It's common. It's a regular name. You generally see it overseas, for sure, as people that are called that. But yeah, it was, I guess, in America sense, definitely among African Americans, it was a lot more common back in the day.
Now that's his hero name, right? That's not his actual name.
Yeah, his hero name is that. His actual name, Avery Silman, however, though, is also based on other family members. So, like the name Avery, for example, is the name of my great grandpa. That's his name. And Silman, same thing. That part being one of our relatives as well. So, really, all of it. The same can be said for his sister, as well as you know, that was kind of my creative way to honor my family. And though they're not like he's not necessarily completely based on the character of Isom. The character of Isom isn't based on like my everything that my great grandfather was about. But as far as like the names, you know, some of that, you know, not some of them, but all of them, as far as who we all introduced, as far as the family members are, you know, inspired by kind of the real life people.
Okay, because I'm just, it fascinates me. What's the reaction of your family when they find out that family members are in your comics?
Well, it's been a cool thing for them to pick up on it, right? Because I didn't even go into it like telling them that, like initially, that was what I was going to do. My mother, I believe, was the only one that I kind of talked to about that. But you know, as I remember my cousin was actually one of the editors. And you know, he was picking up on it like immediately, like, wait a minute, like these characters are named after our family members. And it's like, yeah. So as they pick up, they love it. They absolutely love it. And they appreciate it. And obviously I appreciate them and everything that they've done for me. So, it's been awesome.
Cause I know somebody who, wrote one of his friends into a comic that he was writing, but nice. What he didn't tell him was that the guy was going to be killed. And when he read the book, he goes, wait a minute, you killed me. He goes, so there's always danger when you get written into a comic.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's risky, so, man. It might happen. It's risky.
Something kind of interesting. Now, of course, Yaira, that's another name I'm not terribly familiar with. Is that, where did that come from?
That one, for sure. We want to, you know, people, Yaira, I'll just say this. It'll make a little more sense once people understand or get a chance to read Yaira number one by the Saska sisters, Jen and Sylvia Saska. So I don't want to spoil that one yet. But yes, Yaira is, you know, that being the character's name. It is coordinated, and I think people will not. I think I'm pretty sure people will pick up on exactly why it's like that once they get a hint of Yaira number one.
Now you're expanding your team, which I really like, and you brought in some people that I am particularly fond of and their abilities. And one, of course, is Chuck Dixon. He was going to be—he's doing Alpha Corps, right?
Correct, correct. He is doing the Alpha Corps book.
And Joe Bennett is the artist on that book, right?
That is also true, yes, sir.
Oh, those are two big names to me. So I'm very excited about that. Do you know when that's coming out?
So that I do believe that's something that we're going to be able to make happen within the next month. So that's like right around the corner. That's already been sent to the printer. So really the only thing that we're waiting on is to get the books in hand. I don't really like to release without having books in hand, because I can't really commit to a date unless I have them. So we're going to get those, and then we're going to figure everything out and, launch. We got a lot of special things that are going to be planned for that I can't wait for people to get in on.
Are you going to fundraise like you did with the Isom books?
It'll be in a campaign format. We don't necessarily fundraise. We will give everybody the visual transparency, and everybody can see the numbers and stuff. But I will say this, that pre-order campaign format, we actually released a video not too long ago talking about this in our updates. You know, going into 2024, or in 2024, our release schedule is going to pick up, right? It's going to start getting quick. So it's not going to make as much sense to do it. We'll do maybe more of a traditional format of a pre-order with some cool things that'll be released alongside it. That'll be maybe limited to the pre-order. But what we won't do is have like, you know, basically a merchandise dump as well, which is what these are. That's what the campaigns are. You know, not only being able to get the book, but you can get all kinds of shirts and posters and everything else. So we figure, okay, our schedule is going to be picking up fast, so maybe we shouldn't do that. Instead, what we should do is we have some creative ideas and ways to do it. But for right now, though, yes, Alpha Core will be a pre-order campaign, so you'll be able to see everything there. Same with Yaira. Yaira will be a pre-order campaign as well. After that, though, it'll be kind of pick and choose kind of which releases we want to do that. But there's going to be a lot in between that aren't campaigns per se.
Okay. I have to tell you, Eric, I often tell creators this, is that I don't care how long it takes to get good quality stuff.
There you go.
If I have to wait several months for a good issue to come out, and I always like to use the Dark Knight Returns story. First issue came out, second issue came out the next month after it, third issue came out 6 months later, and the fourth issue came out a year after that. And I remember thinking, am I going to be alive when that fourth issue comes out? But I was so glad, because I enjoyed the story. And I tell you, I'll never forget sitting and reading the fourth issue and enjoying it immensely. And so I always tell people, as long as you're communicating with fans, I think fans are pretty patient when it comes to this stuff. And you guys are really good about communicating. You're out on social media and doing all kinds of stuff. So there's just a whole lot of things. If you go to the ripaverse.com, there's a news section too.
Yeah.
Where you get and one of the things I'm intrigued by is there you are, you're offering career opportunities. Yeah. There are people. What areas are you looking for help with?
So mainly right now, there are some like physical presence. Right, we need is like need people out of our warehouse team as well as our shipping team right now. Because we very much handle our own fulfillment. That's another thing that separates us from pretty much everybody in this industry, is that we handle our own fulfillment. So with handling our own fulfillment, we of course are bringing people in to, we got a massive release that's on the around the corner. So we want to make sure we're preparing all the assets for that. And we're going to need some more help because, I'm the one like in the warehouse, like one of them. And look, let's be honest. Doing stuff like this is what I'm probably, it's more useful, right, to the company to get out there and talk to you guys and be able to interact with fans and do that instead of me being stuck behind the computer or packing orders. It's not necessarily the most conducive to what it is that we're trying to achieve. So we're trying to get fully staffed. We're almost there. So right now, yes, we still are hiring in those two avenues.
And you're in the Dallas, Texas area, right?
Correct. We're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, yep.
Yeah, so since I live in Florida, there's no way I can help you.
Yeah. Maybe soon enough we'll expand out there, just not yet.
That'd be funny if you guys opened up a Ripaverse office here in
Florida. Yeah. Anything can happen at this rate. That'd be funny.
So the great thing that's going on is I did want to talk with you about the ISIM book. Mm-hmm. Because I am always interested, like I said before, I love how things got to be. How long were you working on ISIM before ISIM number one came out?
Oh, boy. It's hard to say exactly. It was a year and some change for sure, minimum, because it wasn't just creative stuff that I did. Because, I had to write it and all that, and then we had to work on pro. So it was over a year for sure, because we had to actually produce it. Right. And that was a 96 page book, and we were on the schedule that. Yeah. So that was about years of change. A lot of it's like you got legal stuff, all this, you're launching a new company. You want to make sure all your ducks in a row, all that. So we did that. But we also, really worked very, very hard on like getting content ready before we wrote it. Me and my concept artist worked very hard. We have a universe Bible and we were putting entries in it. And that was one of the big things that it is that we've had to focus on, because wanted to make sure that any artist that got brought on, including Cliff Richards, who did ISIM 2, they knew what it is they were getting into and they knew who the characters were. So it didn't matter if they were artists or writers. They needed to have that. And it's also a point for us to continue to like add information there. So, we did that at about a year and some change for sure. And then we released it. So it took some time. It wasn't anything that that happened overnight, that's for sure.
Oh, well, you could tell that by looking at the book. Yeah. I mean, I think the art and the pacing is great. You mentioned that the name, where that name came from. What about the character himself? I mean, is he based on somebody you know? Because it sounds like you're often putting your family and other people you know into the book. Is the Isom character himself patterned after somebody?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that from my family, there were like members, uncles, particularly, where I took some of their individual traits and I meshed them all in one, right? And that's how you got who it is that he is. That includes his flaws up and down. So it's not one person that I had in mind when I created him, but it was like looking at and observing people that I grew up around and kind of putting them all in one body, right? And that, mm-hmm. that became Isom.
Well, it's interesting because the very first interview I ever did on this podcast like 12 years ago was David Peterson from Mouse Guard. And I asked him, I was so interested to find out, because he had all these little mice and they were sort of like Knights of the Round Table. And I asked him, did he pattern those characters after the Knights of the Round Table? And he said, no. He says, I patterned them after my friends. Mm. Because I knew my friends and I knew what they would do and stuff like that. So it made it easy for me to write because they would, in my brain, I knew how they would function. And so I just patterned them after that. And I thought that was so interesting to me. And I think you're following a successful thing because this is how you make these characters more realistic and more attainable, I think. So that's one of the things that really got me in the Isom books are how I care about the characters.
Yeah, most definitely.
I just, you know, the things that happen to them, I mean, Isom doesn't necessarily have everything go his way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a long day. Was it not? Yeah.
So I felt badly when things really didn't go his way.
Yeah.
But another thing I really like, too, is the fact that Isom is challenged. Mm-hmm. He's not facing people that's easy to beat. He's got to either be stronger or faster or smarter than the things that he's up against. And I love to see him being challenged and you know, him proving himself kind of to us. And that's one thing that I love about those first two books. Are we going to see more of that in the third?
I mean, the third, it is a change of pace in the sense that it brings everything home, right? It brings this main kind of arc and everything that's been set up. But it does have a little bit of that, right? Because what I'm trying to do here is I want people to get to know him. And I think through those challenges, like this is a character that I hope will really be a big mainstay, right? For the Ripperverse, right? Flagship character, if you will. And understanding that means that I need people to really and truly get who he is. And the way to show that who he is less of me just kind of you got to pick up some things in dialogue for sure. But also you're seeing his experiences, right? And you're seeing what he's going through where, you know, he starts off. I mean, you think about it, his first real interaction where you see him physically in action for the first time, he loses the fight against Santuan, right?
Right, right.
You know, so it's like you see that and you see him go through those experiences. And then he had that conflict like right after that with Yaira and gets tossed down on a taxi cab, you know, like that. I guess you see the interaction in itself, but more importantly, you see how that impacts him and how he reacts to that, which shows you more. You know, he has a bit of stubbornness about him, all that stuff. So it is one of those things where you do see a little bit of that even more in Isom 3, but it also kind of ties everything together, considering that we have had other two books in this arc. But, you know, I'm trying to really get people to understand who this character is and establish the core foundation and core traits and attributes it is that he has.
And one of the things I really like is the fact that Isom is a diverse character, as I like to put it. He's a person of color, and I think he's so well put together, and I just You know, I really appreciate the fact that there obviously a lot of thought went into how he is and who he is and things like that. So I just, the whole Isom character to me, you can tell there was a lot of time and thought put into him and what he's doing and who he is. And I just love that about these books and stuff. I'm grateful that, you know, that he is a person of color, and you started out with your lead character being that kind of person. And it's interesting. You introduced Alpha Corps, which we're going to learn more about, in Yaira. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of diversity going on in these characters. And I think that this is the way to do diversity to me. Show us these characters, challenge them, make them interesting to us, and then take them on adventures. And I think that's one of the things I think the Ripperverse is doing so very well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, our approach is making good characters first. You know what I mean? That's everything it is that we focus on. And I know that I have to do that. Like, regardless of who they are, the gender, the race, or whatever, we have to make these characters compelling. We have to make these characters interesting, first and foremost. So, and that's what we do. That's what we strive to do. You know, we try to make that stuff like almost the least interesting thing about them. It's like, and I love to see that, right? Because you get so many people that are, they're of every ilk, right? They're like Isom, right? You got white people, white men, white women, and, you know, Hispanic, you know, whatever, black. Like there's characters that are able to resonate, that these people are able to resonate, that may look differently than what they do. And to me, that's what this medium is about, right? It's a way to kind of you can display this way people relate to one another, and each and every person individually. And there's a universal truths. There's things that can be displayed or shown rather through this character. And that's what it is that we focus on. We focus on that above all else. And that's why we don't like beat our audience over the head with all that stuff. That's one of the things we promise not to do. We just want to give you good characters that you can know and love. And, you know, as we continue to grow, there'll be this type of character, that type of character, and people are going to gravitate towards what's more aligned with their taste. But in the Ripperverse, I for sure want something for them.
Now, I got to ask you, because, you know, you've done a lot of work, obviously, in setting up the Ripperverse, and now you're having other people come and play in your sandbox. Mm-hmm. What's that like? And how do you pick people to use these characters that have already been developed and to expand the universe for you?
Oh, man, it's so with the character that I created, I know that the first writers of them needed to make sense. If it wasn't going to be me, right? I know the characters, but I need other people to know them as well. So we started off with, and this is another important thing. I knew if this thing was going to grow and it was going to be something that I needed to take, that I was going to take to the top, right?
Right.
I had to get guys that knew what it is that what they were doing, and who better than like a Chuck Dixon, right? Mm-hmm. An absolute industry veteran, one of the most prolific writers of a generation. Mm-hmm. I got him, and I felt like, considering the thing that he had done, you got the Bat Family and all that he'd done over the years, I felt like Alpha Corps was a hand and glove fit for him. Same thing with the Shaska sisters, right? I had developed a relationship with them as friends, and it's the same exact thing. You know, those are, a character like Yaira is just right up their alley. And Mike Barron, right? We haven't mentioned him. Mike Barron's doing Gooding, the Gooding book. So you have a character like that Mike Barron's doing. You know, it's right up their individual alleys. So we have characters that I created, and I had guys in mind that could do it, and I figured we got the best people that I had within reach to do to write these characters. And for all of them, it was a relatively easy process. I'm going to be completely honest, because they're all professionals. They know it is that they're doing. But especially with because they've been around longer, with Jen, Sylvia, Saska, and Chuck Dixon. You know, we're basically, through us three doing so much, is building this universe, or with building this universe. So there's just a lot that when you got passion, it's just easier to do stuff. And I think that's what happened, right? You got a lot of guys that have a lot of passion in what it is they do. They take their jobs very serious, and that just made it very easy as kind of, you know, editor in chief here at Rootverse.
Because the storytelling aspect to me is always great. Chuck is one of my favorite Batman writers of all times. I'm a Batman guy, so that says something. And the other character, other people involved, I'm just, it's so fascinating. But have you been surprised by some of the things that they've written for you and brought to you? Was there a direction you didn't think you'd go, and they made it go? Oh, in their writing,
100%. Like I would say, for both of them, that's exactly what happened. I mean, it wasn't off putting, and it wasn't off of who the characters were supposed to be. Like I'm looking at it, I gave them enough creative freedom to do their thing. I wanted this to be a reflection of who it is that they are, and them to be able to write to their strengths, right? So obviously, they're doing things and conceptualizing things that I would have never thought to do, right? But the awesome thing about both of them is that we all had meetings. We sat down. We had a discussion about who these characters are that are appearing in their book, right? The ones that I created, right? Mm-hmm. And they really wanted to know who they were. They wanted to know exactly who it is that they were. They wanted to, like, understand them. So, you know, with us sending them the Bible entry, Universe Bible entry, and me having a sit-down, legit discussion with both of them about who these characters were, they wanted to understand them back to front. That way they could write them in a situation that made sense for them, not for, you know, whatever vision it is that they had. It was more, does this make sense for the characters? And that's why they are, I mean, just cream of the crop, and credits to them. Just, they're phenomenal writers. They just know what it is they're doing.
Well, Mike Baron, of course, did one of my all-time favorite books, Nexus.
Oh yeah.
To this day, I you know, Nexus to me, the first one I ever saw was when the Judah was going to go off in the first color issue. He goes off and says, "I'll take care of this guy. I'll be right back." And the ship almost immediately comes back, and down off the ship walks the body of Judah with no head. Mm. And you see Sundra, everybody kind of faint, and I remember going, that was such a great bit of writing to me, and he's done that so many times in his writing. He's just excellent. So he's doing the Gooding character.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Gooding character he is, and I'm excited. The script's already done. He's already done what he needed to do, and man, I don't want to give it all away for sure, but it is a great book. It's called Polymath, and you're going to learn a lot about Gooding as a character. We're really going to dive in. Gooding was one of those sleeper characters. I've learned this in music. I say this all the time, so I'm repeating myself. But, you know, one thing I learned in music is that sometimes you'll have a song, and, you know, you might have thought that it was just, it's okay. It's something to put on an album. It's not bad, but it's not going to be the hit. And then that's one of the ones that resonate with the audience the most. It was kind of like that with Gooding, right? Gooding was a character. Yeah, we name him in the cover A of Isom. We name him. But we didn't show anything off for him, right? You didn't see him in any of the covers. You didn't see him until you read the book. So he was one of the characters that we introduced that, yeah, he's pretty vital, all things considered, to the storyline. But it was a character where I was like, okay, is he more of a support, and how people are going to respond to it? I didn't know. Like, I didn't know. I didn't think people would hate him. I wouldn't have created him if that were the case. But I didn't know they would like him to this degree. And from our customers, that was the feedback it was that we got. And it was that they really liked this character of Gooding. So I got to work. I got a guy that I thought could do just a phenomenal job with him, and that was Mike Baron.
Wow! I can't wait to read that. That's going to be wild. It's going to be something great because it's so much fun to see. Kind of, what about are other people going to create other characters as well? I mean, you've developed these characters, and other people are using them. Are you going to give some people the freedom to create new characters?
Well, I will say this, and really all three books, there are some vital characters that we're probably going to do a lot with going forward, that all of them created, between Chuck, between Jen and Sylvia Saska, as well as Mike Baron. yes, those the first books that they're doing are based on characters that I created, but there's characters within that story that they absolutely created that are, whew, people are going to love them. I can't wait for people to tune in. So absolutely. And maybe inevitably, you know, depending on how the audience is responding, you know, maybe those characters do get their own kind of titles and stuff. We'll see. But yeah, for sure, there's some new characters that get introduced that they created that I had, you know, nothing to do with in Alpha Corps, Yaira, as well as Gooding's Polymath book.
See, I really appreciate that attitude of yours, because I've known some comics creators who have strictly managed, shall we say, people in their sandbox where they don't give them a lot of freedom. And I think the results haven't been as strong as what you're doing. So I have to applaud your ability to let people be creative around you and to expand the universe, maybe in ways, like we said, that you hadn't considered. And see, that to me, creativity like that is so much fun. I just, you can tell it in the book.
Most definitely. And I appreciate that. And I think it's important. It's important to have people that know what it is that they're doing. And to me, the way that I see it, definitely if I'm bringing more people in, like, why bring them in if you don't trust them to do good work? You know, that's the way that I see it. So I'm excited for the books it is that we've created here. Obviously, I'm stoked that people love ISOM 1 and ISOM 2. But man, we've been working on so much and this past year. And I'm just once people get these characters and these books in hand, it's just going to keep going, man. I'm so excited.
Well, it just looks great. And of course, it says on the website that ISOM 3 is the finale to that initial arc.
Correct.
Do you have other arcs in mind for ISOM?
I have an idea of where I'm going to take this character going into another arc with ISOM 4, for sure. I do have some ideas. But, you know, the arc format isn't for every character. Like I would say Alpha Corps not to say that Alpha Corps won't have arcs in the future, but Alpha Corps 1 isn't like part one of an arc. It's more of just an issue one. But yeah, I like the arc format because it lets people know kind of, hey, there's going to be more to come and how we're kind of telling the story. And it made sense. That's the awesome thing about what it is that we're doing. We're not stuck to one way to release a book, right? So, you know, for ISOM, it made sense to do the arc format. And definitely because the first two books were going to be his. So it made all the sense in the world to do a 1 and 2 and a 3. And to complete this finale, I can't wait for people to read it for sure. But it just made sense for that character.
Well, you know, I got to say something. One of the things that drives me crazy in comics is that stories never end. Mm-hmm. You know, this. Let's just say there's a certain company that does a big event, and by the big event is coming to an end, and people are getting tired of it. So here's another big event.
Oh man!
And it goes on to another big event, and then that one people get tired of that. There's a third big event, and you can really. And the thing that gets me is they don't really end.
Right.
To me, I love a story that, you know, it doesn't mean that everything the character has to die or any of that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
It just has to be a satisfying ending. And when I come across a satisfying ending, I love that. I'm going to tell you right now, I am so looking forward to what you have in mind for number 3, because your writing for the first two issues to me has just been stellar. And I just can't wait to see. Because I have a feeling you're not going to do the big event kind of thing.
Oh, no. That's just not even our format. We don't like doing that. That's been one of the things I've been critical of other companies doing. Like, you know, doing an event, then right after that event going into a next one. Like, what it does is it's like events don't feel like events anymore, right? It's nothing epic about it by any means, because it's not important, because you're running into the next one. So, yeah, the arc, it's an arc for a reason, you know, and that is because there is a conclusion to it, right? And I do believe that it'll be fulfilling for the audience to get that conclusion of that first arc. It's not the end of ISOM's story. It's just the end of that story for ISOM. And I do believe that people are going to love it. But that's, the benefit of the arc format. And we're going into moving on to continue to develop the character going into ISOM 4. But ISOM 3 does have a nice little ending to it.
Great. Oh, I can't wait to read that.
Yeah.
I tell you, I'm dying to read that. There's one thing you mentioned too on the website, and you mentioned omnibuses. Are you gonna be collecting certain arcs? Maybe like say maybe Isom 1-3 is going to be in an omnibus.
Yeah, that's a doable thing. I think that's to be expected. How we approach that, I mean, we'll see. But I do think that obviously makes sense. It definitely, if there's a demand to get like a collection, now that's going to be a massive book because that's going to put it over well over 300 pages.
Wow.
of the full arc. But that's cool. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, we just have a big book that we release. And yeah, I'm 100% game for that, getting collection. And definitely as we grow 5-10 years from now, you know, people want to really get some of stuff. We collect different various things. But yeah, it does make a lot of sense for Isom 1, 2, and 3 to have to have those issues to have that as, let's say, an omnibus or a collection. I think that's a very doable thing.
Oh, I like that because I like big books that I can pull out and I can dive into and get lost in.
Yeah.
For a while, you know, if I just say I want to have a good story and I want to be in it for a while, I got time. Let me go and dive into this book and enjoy that. So I'm on board for that. If you want to do that, boy, I'm going to want those because that's going to be great fun to be able to put down and read. So see, you're doing all the right things, I think. And one of the things I noticed too, you mentioned on the website there were minor errors. Welcome to getting started in publishing.
Yeah,
for that you're going to correct them, and if you do for omnibuses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a proofreader, and I didn't notice them. Of course, I wasn't looking for them. I was so involved in the story, I didn't notice any of that. But
yeah.
I have to say that that's the right thing to do. Because some people have re-released the first issues, and throw all the other ones away.
We don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, forget that.
Yeah, we don't want to do. I actually love that this is our kind of creative way to do things, because for us, we get to like show people like our growth. Right. That's our way of doing it. Right. It's not to say the slight mistakes, and to your point, they don't get rid of the story. If I didn't tell people that, they wouldn't have noticed it. But we did. And it's just one of those things that, we'll get better and we'll continue to grow as a company. But yeah, we're not just going to throw everything away, definitely, because it's not like a critical error or anything like that. So yeah.
Yeah. It just sounds great. I mean, you're doing all the things that I consider to be the right stuff, telling good adventures, building strong characters, bringing in people who are good storytellers and stuff like that. I wish you nothing more but great success. And I wish you even more success. I wish you get more millions
in
future things, because you're doing the right thing. And this gives you the ability to bring in the people you want. And that's such a great thing. I'm so happy with how this is going for you. And I tell you, if you haven't gone to Ripperverse.com, believe me, you want to go there, because you're going to learn a lot of wonderful stuff about the Ripperverse of what's going on there and the great things happening. Is there anything that you would like us to know about what's going on that fans or people just learning about it should learn about the Ripperverse and what's coming?
Oh, well, I would say one of the bigger things I think people should really not sleep on, let's say that, is Ripperverse Studios. That is our animation wing, if you will, our production wing, outside of books. So it ain't just animation, but we have a lot of things cooking with Ripperverse Studios that I want people to look forward to. They got a little tease with the Isom 2 animation trailer, but we got a lot of stuff that we got planned. So that would be the only other thing I would say. Hey guys, keep tabs on Ripperverse Studios in the next couple of, months, years, all that. That's a part of our company that we're going to be taking really seriously.
I am so happy with all the stuff you're doing. Animation could certainly stand some good adventure in it, I have to say. So I'm looking forward to that, too. So are you guys on social media as well? I mean, obviously the website's a good place to go, but what about social media? Where would we go for that?
Yeah, we're all over Ripperverse. Generally, when you type it in, the Ripperverse at X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. We're on, it's just Rip Reverse over at Instagram. We're also on Facebook. So yeah, all the major social media platforms, we do have a presence on that. So yeah, go follow us over there.
Okay. Well, Eric, you're doing all kinds of wonderful stuff, and I cannot wait to see what the future holds for you guys, because just such tremendous storytelling and great characters and world building and all kinds of wonderful stuff going. It's great to be in on the ground floor with that, which we as fans get to do. So just keep it up. Wonderful. And here's hoping there's many more millions in your future and many more great books coming.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you so much for having me, brother.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.